Is there hope for America? Well, we're going to talk about that right now with Bill Federer, who is a highly sought-after public speaker. He's a best-selling author. He's always on the go. In fact, I think at this time he's traveling from one airport to another. Perhaps his best-known book is America's God and Country, which I find to be an indispensable resource full of key quotes from America's leaders on God and government. And Bill joins us now to discuss the issue of, is there hope for America? Bill, there's quite an attack against America as founded. I would like your thoughts on that. By the way, I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. My good friend Bill Federer, speak and talk about America and hope.
Well, Jerry, there's always hope. And I think we remind ourselves of the stories we love best in the Bible are what? Moses, 80-year-old man, and the most powerful military in the world, the Egyptians at the time, are charging in at us, and he stands up and holds out his staff, and the waters come in and swallow up the Egyptians. And then David against Goliath, and then there's Gideon against the 100,000 Midianites. And the stories we love best is when things look absolutely hopeless, and God raises up little nobodies with faith and courage. You have Attila the Hun, 450 AD, wiping out cities across Europe, and a young woman named Genevieve gets all of Paris to fast and pray. And for some reason, Attila skips sacking Paris. We come up to the American Revolution. The King of England was a globalist. He was a one-world government guy with him at the top. And he had India, Australia, New Zealand, Hong Kong, British Guyana, Canada, Barbados, Bermuda, Jamaica, and America. And America's founders broke away and flipped it. But it didn't happen without the people having faith and courage. Matter of fact, my wife and I put together a couple books called Miracles in American History, and we were thrilled that D. James Kennedy Ministry picked it to make a special gift edition to offer through D. James Kennedy Ministry, Miracles in American History. And you have the Battle of Brooklyn Heights, biggest battle of the Revolution, and the British fill up New York Harbor with 400 ships, 32,000 troops, and we don't have a standing army. We just have a ragtag thrown together. Washington is there, and the British even find a loyalist. This is it's somebody. It's like a leaker, somebody that lives in America, but they're loyal to the enemy. And they show the British where to land and march all night long through Jamaica Pass and attack Washington's troops from behind on August 27th of 1776. And 3,000 Americans get killed, only 300 British. It is totally lopsided. This is the entire American army. There's no second string. If you were to look at it in the natural, you would have said, this is over. I mean, but Washington gets every boat he can find, and he begins to ferry the troops across the East River to Manhattan Island. And he's doing it quiet, pitch black, horses, cannons, everything. And then the sun starts to come up, and he had only moved half the army. Now he's a real sitting duck. And his chief of intelligence, Major Ben Talmadge, writes, as the dawn of the next day approached, those of us who remained in the trenches became very anxious for our own safety. And when the dawn appeared, there were several regiments still on duty. At this time, a very dense fog began to rise off the river and settle in a peculiar manner over both encampments. I recollect this peculiar providential occurrence perfectly well. And so very dense was the atmosphere that I could scarcely discern a man at 6 yards distance. We tarried until the sun had risen, but the fog remained as dense as ever. So they continued to move the troops almost up to noon. George Washington was on the last boat that left. The fog clears, the British charge, nobody's there. That was the last chance the British had to capture the entire American army all at once. Washington later writes, the hand of Providence has been so conspicuous in the course of the war, that he must be worse than an infidel that lacks faith. But it will be time enough for me to turn preacher when my present appointment ceases. And so this is a miracle that took place. Another was the Battle of Cowpens down in South Carolina. And the British have a Colonel Tarleton, this 26-year-old nicknamed the Butcher, because at the Battle of Waxhaw, there were 300 Americans surrendering. And he has his men on horseback. They're called dragoons, the light cavalry. He has them charge, and they kill 300 Americans who are surrendering. And so this butcher in the Battle of Cowpens, Tarleton is chasing the American general Daniel Morgan. And the light cavalry doesn't have supplies. They're just really fast. And Daniel Morgan has an entire army for the Americans, and he's slow and realizes that he can't outrun them, so he's got to fight. But he picks the place, and he picks in front of a river where there's a sloping hill. Now, you never fight a battle in front of a river, because if you're losing, it makes it hard to run away. So it looked like a foolish thing, but he did it on purpose. And so this Colonel Tarleton has been chasing him for 24 hours, and finally he sees these Americans in front of the river. And he says, this is going to be like Waxhaw. We're just going to have, and so he has this light cavalry charge. Well, Daniel Morgan had the militia in front, who had a reputation of firing a couple times and running away. And then behind him, he had the Continental soldiers who had been in lots of battle, and they're courageous. They're not going to run away. So the Americans fire once, they fire twice. This militia runs away, and the British are now really closing in. And the Continental soldiers act like they're going to run away. And then on a dime, they turn on their heels, they level their rifles, and at point blank, they shoot and kill 100 of these British dragoons. And then the ones that ran away just circled around the other side and attacked at 800 of the British dragoons, threw down their weapons and surrendered. Colonel Tarleton rides off, and when the news gets to Cornwallis that he had lost his best, troops, he was leaning on his sword. He leaned so hard, the sword snapped in half. And so Cornwallis is chasing Daniel Morgan, who crosses the Catawba River. And then before the British can cross, there's a flash flood, and the river rises over its banks and delays the British. And then they're making a dash for the Dan River, and General Nathaniel Greene joins up with them. The Americans cross, the British show up, and before the British can cross, there's another flash flood, delays the British. And then they get to the Dan River, crossing into Virginia. The Americans cross, another flash flood, and delays the British. And so three flash floods in just 10 days. And one the British General Henry Clinton writes, here the Royal Army was again stopped by a sudden rise of the waters, which had only just fallen almost miraculously to let the enemy over, who could not else have eluded Lord Cornwallis's grasp, so close was he upon their rear. And so this is a miracle that you have us being able to win this battle and escape. But there's all these kind of stories throughout our country's history. And here we are today. Yes, it is reaching a global dimension that it has never been at before. But I think that God is still God. And Jesus says wheat and tares grow together till the harvest. And I think that this is just our turn to stand up and face, defend the defenseless, stand up for righteousness, and let him use us in the situations we're facing today.
But by the way, thank you for sharing these stories. But what's so fascinating today and is discouraging is to see people like, you were talking about George Washington and his incredible exploits, for example, and how God helped him and the troops and so forth. Today, many young people, disparage George Washington and his reputation because he owned slaves and so forth. And they don't seem to even realize, hey, he freed his slaves and he also made steps to get them to be freed and so forth. And Thomas Jefferson, fought and opposed slavery, but he owned slaves and wasn't able to free his slaves at the end because he was heavily in debt and so forth. But the founding fathers, it seems like they're not given the credit that they really deserve for the sacrifices they committed and the overall structure that they created that would lead to freedom, even freedom for the slaves one day.
Right. So one of the books I put together is called Change to Chains, and it's an overview of all of recorded human history. So I took it was like a couple year project, and I read through every single century of recorded history, the the ancient Assyrians, the ancient Elamites, and the ancient Persians, and the 2,000 years of Egyptian pharaohs, and you know, the 5,000 years of Chinese emperors, and the Indian Maharajas. And one thing seems clear: the most common form of government is kings. And kings are, in a sense, just glorified gang leaders. Gangs is the default setting for human government. And a gang leader with lots of weapons is called a king, or a pharaoh, or a Caesar, a Kaiser, Sultan, Tsar. But power, like a black hole, you know, right? In space, you have the black hole where it sucks in, you know, light. And power wants to concentrate into the hands, ultimately, of one person. And then you have ancient Israel. When they come out of Egypt around 1400 BC, and for 400 years, they don't have a king. And it's every single person's taught the law, and they're accountable to God to follow the law, and they're in a covenant with each other. So if you just get rid of a king, it's going to be every man a law unto themselves, and it would be chaos. So it's get rid of the king, people taught the law, but it's people in covenant with each other and with God. And this worked for 400 years until the priests stopped teaching the law, and every man did what was right in their own eyes, and then they get King Saul. But you had, after the Reformation, you had kings of Europe killing people who didn't believe the way they did, and then you had John Calvin bringing back this covenant form of government from ancient Israel that first 400 years. And so this inspired the Puritans, and the Puritans settled New England, and they took their covenant form of church government and they made it their community government. And so here in America, the word federal is Latin for covenant. We have a covenant form of government where we, the people, could rule ourselves without a king. And this idea was borrowed from the New England pastors. It was borrowed from John Calvin. It was borrowed from this Hebrew Republic, this first 400 years out of Egypt before King Saul. So in a sense, King Saul is the divider between England and America. The kings of England look to the Bible for their authority, but they look to the King Saul and on part of the Bible. The Calvinist Puritans who settled New England look to the Bible for their authority, but they look to the pre-King Saul period. This 400 years, millions of people, no king. It worked because everyone was taught the law, and they're accountable to God to follow the law, and they're in a covenant with each other and with God. And so our founding fathers, for all their faults, they gave us a present. And that present is you get to be the king of your life with a little K, and then all of us together are the king of the country, right, with a little K. And we have the voluntary opportunity of submitting our lives to Jesus, the King of Kings. Psalms 110 says, "Thy people shall be willing in the day of thy power." So he's not interested in establishing a top-down, I'm going to burn you at the stake and chop your head off if you don't believe. No, he's interested in thy people be willing. And so this is a voluntary of us with our free conscience surrendering our lives to the Lord. But our founders gave us a present, and that you get to decide where you want to live, who you want to marry.
Yeah, it's like that old statement from, Dinesh D'Souza, where he says, "I like America. In America, you can write your own script." Okay, Bill, you have 45 seconds to wrap up. Whatever you want to say. Is there hope for America? AmericanMinute.com for more information. Go ahead, Bill.
There is hope, and the hope is each one of us asking the Lord, what do you want us to do? And he has an idea for each one of us. And I travel the country. I've been to all 50 states, and I'm amazed. People say, I want to do election integrity. And I want to, stand up for kids, being boys and girls. And so this is our opportunity to do those things for the Lord, and it's exciting.
All right, and thank you for doing more than your part, and people can see your daily American Minute reports at AmericanMinute.com. They can learn all about your books and all about your incredible speaking, and you're a great guest on all these different programs. Thanks, Bill. I really appreciate you.
Thank you, Jerry. I'm honored to be on your program.
Okay, AmericanMinute.com.